welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julietta Televi, and tackling your questions on the line this evening on Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth and Alex Dace from Umthombo Wealth. If you'd like to send questions, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Nick, Alex, good evening to you both. Nick, if I may start with you, a green finish for the JSE today. Some pretty strong moves from some fairly big shares. Sasol having a very good day thanks to that rampaging oil price, and some of the miners doing okay. But the market feels quite choppy and sort of dislocated. There's no clear trend, and maybe I've been saying this for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, evening, Joe. That's exactly right. Very directionless, choppy markets. We obviously got the heavy lifting, the likes, as you pointed out, Sasol, some of my miners had a good day. The travel shares came back with a vengeance, City Lodge and a few of the smaller caps as well. So I've got it, like in the old days, used to say, like a generally good feel about the tape compared to the offshore markets, which were, I'm showing my age here, offshore markets, which were pretty much in the red. And on outside of our borders, I felt the market almost had a bit of a risk off day. And I guess look no further than the Rand, telling us a different story to our stocks, actually.
Yeah. Alex, maybe just looking at those hospitality stocks that did pretty well today. Nick mentioned, so City Lodge had a very a good day. Tsokhosan, which I suppose is maybe more widely held, jumped, I think, 5%. Do you think maybe this is now their moment? And in fact, there is a question on City Lodge, so let me just dive straight into that. It says some movement from City Lodge, which has otherwise been largely sideways. I've bet on them to return to previous levels. Is this the start? What's the panel's view on the economic climate and prospects? And they're rallying in, I suppose, expectation that we be removed from the red list of the UK's red list after some intensive lobbying. Could you see them ever returning to what they were, though, City Lodge in particular?
Look, I mean, the removal of the red list is certainly very welcome to the... our tourism industry has been decimated, as we all know. And if you take the UK, before COVID, they had about 440,000 odd tourists a year that came to South Africa. And we know, of course, they do come to predominantly Cape Town, as well as perhaps to Kruger and so forth. But certainly, some influx of tourists is going to make a big difference. Now, if you look at overall companies, something like a Sorgho does tend to cater a bit more for tourists as well. So certainly, and they've got some very good assets as well in the likes of Western Cape. So that certainly will be beneficiary. Well, City Lodge has historically been more tied to business travel, with a little bit of tourism aspect towards as well. So I don't think City Lodge will get the same type of benefit as a Sorgho would do. Also, if you look at the two businesses, Sorgho was able to really run the business almost cash neutral at 27% occupancy, which is an incredible number if you think about it. Yeah. Also, the laws actually need a little bit more. They've had their issues with the BE structure. And as a result of the big rises that they have, the share price cannot go back to where it used to be. So I think that's something you have to be cognizant of because of the number of shares have increased exponentially. But the market cap, the overall value of the business, perhaps can still recover to where it was before, but that will translate into a lower share price. It's more technical aspect, but just be cognizant of that rights issue. Yeah. But certainly the sector is going to benefit. Also the gaming side of things, Sorgho Sun Gaming, Sun International, you would imagine they'll also get some benefit from it.
Yeah. Nick, I mean, Bruce Woodfield wrote a story for us on City Lodge for the FM, that is, a couple of weeks ago. And he made the point that City Lodge has hotels that aren't necessarily in the most scenic areas. So because they were always, intended for business travel, which is, I'm not sure will ever be the same. I spoke to the Adapt IT CEO, Tiffany Dunstan, who is in Australia, has been for 12 years. She used to travel. She said in 12 years, she did 84 trips sort of between here and South Africa, and just says that way of doing business is obsolete in her view. And I really think that's it's not going to go back to what it was. So I do fear for a City Lodge that it's never going to be what it was.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I don't think it ever will be. Business, as you pointed out, business travel, a large portion of City Lodge's occupancy. I look at what I've done the last couple of months, and we used to travel also quite extensively, but obviously within our borders. I mean, that's off the cards. There's no chance in flying to Cape Town for a one-hour meeting anymore. You just jump on Zoom or jump on Teams or exactly what we're doing now. Yeah. So I don't think we are, unfortunately. I mean, but City Lodge is, from a cash position, is not bad. As Alex pointed out, rights issues, they're cash flush. But it was dilutionary, and Juliet, I fear that we won't ever get back to what we once were with the likes of a City Lodge.
And your thoughts on the Tsohos and the Sun Internationals? Do you think they are worth a punt, or do you think? I mean, do you think we've maybe missed the boat? In okay, I know it's just a one-day jump, but
let me dive straight in. No, I don't think we have missed the boat. You know, if we do get off that red list, which is the rumor is in the next few days, you know, it's a massive portion of our business and overseas business, particularly United Kingdom, the contributes such a massive part of tourism in South Africa. The rand is looking very attractive for overseas investors at just over 15 now against the dollar. So I do think they are probably still worth a look. And also a lot of people locally wanting to travel and to get on the board. In fact, I was just by the bus, one of my colleagues flew in from Cape Town today actually to spend the week in Joburg. He said the 7 o'clock flight this morning he's never in 20 years of traveling had to queue so long and see so many people at the airport. So I don't know, take it or not, but people do want to get back and travel again. I think they do.
Yeah.
But business travel, slightly different space.
Yeah. Well, I feel for your colleague. Alex, would you be buying any of the Sun Internationals or Tsohos at these levels?
Yeah, look, I've been constructive on Soho Sun Hotels, especially for quite some time, and I think even at these levels, I would still be looking to hold onto it. The gaming businesses are slightly different because they also do have I guess all of them got debt, but specifically the gaming businesses, Sun International, do have a lot of debt in there, so it's a bit of a more riskier investment perspective, but they do generate very good cash flows. And if they are able to continuously de-gear, it will be very, very supportive for the share prices, especially when revenues start picking up. Yeah. Remember, these businesses tend to have very high fixed costs. So when revenue does increase, it does lead to quite a nice increase on the bottom line for these businesses or cash flows that will eventually pay down debt and then perhaps medium-term dividends for shareholders.
Yeah, medium-term. Yeah, exactly. Just wait for a bit. What about Spur? So what is the panel's view on Spur? The share hasn't really responded to South Africa's pending removal from the UK's red list. The share is also pregnant with a dividend of 78 cents a share. The panel's views would be appreciated. And Alex, sticking with you, Spur, you know, has been through the ringer, and they had to pivot in all sorts of ways, have drive-through restaurants, do a lot more takeaways, but they came through it. I mean, you know, the results that they put out, 10 days ago, a week ago, were decent. But I suppose the point is, where to now?
Yeah, look, so Spur is predominantly a franchisee business, right? So that means they do receive quite a lot of annuity revenue. They don't have a lot of capex. So it's very cash generative business under normal circumstances. And despite things being tough, they are still very cash generative. So that dividend is certainly secured there. And the balance sheet is also very, very conservatively managed at the moment. As we know, sit-down restaurants are taking a bit of a pain during the COVID period and perhaps will have a bit of a longer path to recovery than perhaps normal type other parts of the economy. But I've got no doubt that Spur will make a very good, strong recovery over the medium to long term. I think as vaccines get rolled out and we have some sort of normalcy coming back, we'll see people going back to dining restaurants. And Spur Brands, which is really covering from many aspects, from kids and formal dining like Hustle Grill and so forth, I think caters for a wide spectrum of market and is still beloved by most Africans.
Yeah.
So you have to be patient, but I've got no doubt it'll be a good investment over medium to long term.
Nick, would you concur? I mean, you know, it's got a huge range of brands. Panarottis, Rocamamas, which I think was a feature for them, a very good performance in this last period.
Yeah, as you point, it was a trading update, earnings was 10 days ago. That's exactly right. I think they had turnover of $1 billion for the first time ever. And as Alex pointed out, you know, like very cash flow generative, margins still quite high, and it's not an expensive share. And I think the management, what they've done during lockdown and how they've had to pivot towards the takeaways as opposed to the sit-downs, I think there's more upside than the potential as we do start to get out there and start outside dining again or going out again. I think they were an excellent set of results. I'm actually quite a big fan of the share.
Okay, and hopefully a pan of going out to eat at one of the restaurants. Then there's a question on some of the mining stocks. Strong showing by the resources sector today by Anglo buying back their shares. I'm wondering whether it's because they're bereft of investment ideas or whether this buyback is strategic in any other sense, and the panel's thoughts would be interesting. Nick, what do you think? Because there is a criticism. I mean, mining companies come in for all sorts of criticism. The one thing is that they overspend when they have money to spend on buying other businesses or by opening up new shafts. So they get criticized for that. They also get criticized if they don't do that and they don't, extend, you know, or turn the resources that they have in the ground into into results, into revenue and profit. Hmm. Do you think this is the right call by an Anglo?
Look, I think it's unfair criticism, actually, because I thought the miners of the last cycle, the last sort of 5-10 years, have been extremely conservative with their cash. You know, 10-15 years ago, they're always buy acquisitions and buy mines and new shafts at the top of the cycle. You could literally call it to the day. Whereas this time around, there's been very little. There's hardly any new mines have opened up, hardly any new developments. Very little mines that have been opened anywhere across the spectrum. So I think they've been very conservative. And the only thing that did recently was buy that, I think it was the fertilizer business in the UK at the end of last year, which is going to be coming on stream shortly. But I think they've been quite conservative. I think this is quite a clever way of spending capital. They obviously see value in their shares, share price down quite significantly from where it was. And I actually think it's unfair criticism. I think it's a good use of capital personally.
Okay.
And I think as the cycle bounces back, as we're seeing with commodities the last couple of days, you know, I think they've still got the cash and the generous cash flow to spend. That's my 2 cents worth.
Alex, do you agree with Nick, or do you think that actually, I mean, which for you is better for shareholders in the long run? If a company buys back its stock, or if it invests in new shafts, in new income-producing assets?
Look, I mean, first, regarding capital allocation discipline, I think I agree with Nick. It's actually quite a good mix at Anglo American at the moment. They are spending on CapEx, new greenfields as well. They are paying good dividends and share buybacks. So as investors, you can't really complain too much about it. You have to find a balance as well. You know, you can't not be investing at all in new projects going forward, because then you will have a bit of a supply cliff at some stage. So some investment is required, but luckily we're not seeing a repeat of the last big cycle in 2009. We saw these huge projects that we came with massive cost overruns, and of course, they led to a massive decrease in prices as well. So I think the balance is right. Obviously, from a preference perspective, shareholders will always prefer dividends, because that will put the money in your own pocket, so you can decide how it needs to be allocated. But share buybacks is a decent option when the price is relatively fair, and you still need to invest, I believe, going forward. Obviously, brownfields will be less risky than greenfields, but we still need new mines in the world. For example, copper and so forth. We need to go out there and find new mines. We can't just stop investing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we do seem to have a bit of an investment strike, but I suppose that's also up for the government to do something about their policies to make it more attractive. Then there's a question which was a bit of a head-scratcher for us. I mentioned it before we went on air. And it says, I took the partial share settlement option when AB InBev bought SAB Miller. So I have some unlisted New Belco, that was what they were called, shares that are due for conversion to AB InBev shares. What are the potential positives for retaining the unlisted New Belco shares? Are there any positives for retaining unlisted shares in an entity? I mean, do either of you know if you actually have to convert them into AB InBev shares? Nick?
You stumped me there, the viewer. I'm not familiar with it. I mean, what I would say though is I tend to like things I can sell when I want to. So converting shares to a listed entity with a bid and an offer on the screen on the JSE makes me feel a lot more comfortable when I want to get out in 1 second and hit the button. Retaining your shares in an unlisted entity, I guess that's my own personal view. I don't like things like that.
Yeah.
And then a second question would be, I'm not sure of what the rules are regarding the conversion or not. But I prefer my first part. I like things I can get out of when I want to.
Yeah. Alex, do you have any further insight?
No, not really. I agree with Nick. Certainly, I mean, I haven't looked into it because none of my clients has got a particular option other than my wife. And I told my wife she needs to convert. So without even looking into it.
You're very brave.
Yeah, of course I didn't look into it. Okay.
And it's not, in fact, your wife sending in a question this evening. She didn't doubt your advice, so that's a good thing. And very quick question before we move on to stock picks. Do you think the recent partnership of Purple Group and Discovery will make the Purple Group share price rise? If so, expand my holding in Purple or sell? And in fact, you have actually seen a parabolic increase in the Purple Group share price over the last couple of days. I think over a week it's up 30%. That's incredible. Nick, would you be cashing in now, or do you think this has actually got legs?
No, I don't think so. I don't. And I speak from disclosure that Sunderland does hold 30% or 20% of them. I think they're doing very interesting things. The team over there, Mark Barnes, Charles Savage, and the guys, I think they're doing very exciting things, bringing investing to the masses cheaply. It's direct. It's just I just get quite excited what they're doing, and with the discovery, it is very interesting what they're pivoting into too. And then if I put my old trading hat on, you know, when the share price is running like it is, you know, why would you want to sell it?
Yeah.
A lot of buyers in it. The fintech is the hot space to be at the moment, and there's very few opportunities like this on the JSE. So to the viewer, I'd say hang on to it.
Yeah,
Hang on to it for now.
Alex, I don't know if you have a very quick comment there, or if you'd prefer I move on to your stock pick this evening, or both.
Perhaps quickly, I mean, there's a lot of retail investors that do participate in Purples. There's a lot of hot money, then people tend to follow the news flow. And perhaps there could be a disconnect between the true value and the share price every now and again. So I think that's something I have to be cognizant. So as a result, I think the share price will be quite volatile up and down
Yeah.
over extended periods of time.
Okay. All right. Getting to your stock pick this evening, Alex, what would you be buying?
Yeah, so Remgro is traditionally for me quite a boring investment over the last few years, but I do like the fact that they're looking to finally start up some corporate restructuring. We've seen it in on a number of shares already part of the Remgro stable over the last couple of years. For example, RMH at first bundled First Rand. Now Remgro might continue to sell First Rand itself. We've got RMI, which is going to bundle Discovery, Momentum. We've got RCL Foods, which is doing things. And at the same time, Remgro's also got stakes in businesses like Siqalo, which they can also merge with RCL as well as Grindrod's, you know, Bats, etc. So I do think there's going to be a lot of corporate action. According to our calculations, they could raise up anything to about 30 billion if they have to sell everything, including the Distell, of course.
Yeah.
And that, of course, will then be allocated towards more listed, unlisted assets going forward. So I think this is a good entry point for a medium-term recovery in Remgro.
Yeah, and still trading a big discount to its net asset value. Nick, how about you?
Yeah, I'm sticking with local as well, Northam Platinum. Out with earnings a couple of weeks ago, I like what they're doing with regards to certainly their allocation of capital. They're one of the few companies, the miners, that didn't pay out everything they got in after the high platinum price and the rhodium price. Instead, they chose to conclude the Zambezi pref share deal. So that takes away that overhang on that over the stock. And also looking at spot prices, rhodium bouncing back nicely. Platinum has been a little bit of overhang too with regards to the motor companies and the chip shortages, which we think will pass in the next couple of months as the supply chains open up again. So at the current levels, $100 from where it was just a few months ago, we like Northam Platinum as a house.
Okay, great. Gents, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nice to chat to you both. Nick Kunze is from Sanlam Private Wealth. Alex Dace is from Umthombo Wealth, and we'll be back tomorrow to take more of your questions. Have a good evening.
Thank you.